Hey, everybody. Welcome to Liberty Lipstick and Lead, your go-to podcast for all things freedom, firearms, and fabulosity. I am your host, Ursula Ann, and I'm thrilled to have you tuning in today for the very first episode with my special guest, Ursula Williams. Today, we're here to dish out the real talk. We'll be chatting about some things they don't always cover in those fancy gun magazines. But before we dive into the fun, don't forget to follow, hit that like button, and subscribe to the channel. Tap that bell so you always get notified of future episodes. Trust me, you don't want to miss what's coming. Whether you're a seasoned shooter or just dipping your toes into the firearms world, this podcast is going to be your go-to gal pal. I want to be here to help you navigate, learn, and maybe even laugh a little bit along the way. So kick back, relax, and let's have some fun because, let's be real, feeling safe, looking fabulous, and being proficient AF, that's the ultimate goal, am I right?
Thank you so much, first of all, for being here. I'm really excited. This is my very first time shooting a podcast, my first podcast episode with anyone, my first time meeting you, and I really like you, so I'm super stoked. All right. Well, I'm all things curious. So how did you get into shooting? Like, you were actually the first Black female shooter that I found on Instagram. Mm-hmm. So how did that happen?
Oh, how did it happen? So I've been in law enforcement for a long time. I'm rolling up on 19 years. Wow. However, my job did not teach me how to shoot. I'm just going to throw that out there because everybody's like, oh, you know, you're a cop or, you know, you work wherever. Wow. But you know what? I'm like, no, they do not teach you how to shoot. They basically teach you how to pass a qualification. So I get a lot of people sending me a lot of, like, what we call OISs, acronym for officer involved shootings. And they're like, hey, what do you think? I'm like, I wasn't there. So, but I could do a Monday morning quarterback, but I don't know all the facts, but pretty much about, I would say 2010, I was just like, you know what? I need to become a little bit more proficient on my duty gun because it was literally the only gun that I had. And so I just started doing ladies night at the range. And then that happened about a couple years later. A guy I was dating was like, hey, let's go to this local carbine match. And I'm like, nice. All right. What? I don't know what to expect. You know? So it was like a USPSA match, which was like more pistol match, but with ARs. And at that time, you know, I built my first AR and I was like, cool, let's go. So we went, watched, and I'm like, yo, do y'all have this for pistol, you know, at this range? And they're like, yeah, Thursday nights. I'm like, okay, cool. So, like, the following Thursday night, I showed up in my duty gear with my duty pistol and this little steel match, and then just fell through this rabbit hole. So, 2014, I started doing, like, local Glock matches at another indoor range. So, me being, like, one of two chicks there, it was just basically, I was getting, like, a little high award, whatever. So, from that, I was still shooting at that other range because, like, this is Arizona. So, like, there's literally a match every day of the week except for Mondays. Like, you can literally shoot at any range. That's like, there's a competition going. So, I thought it was pretty cool. So, I went back to the other match. And one of the guys that matched was actually running it. And at the time, I had no concept of what a pro shooter was. Like, I had no idea. I was like, I didn't even know it was a thing. But he was like, hey, you need to do three gun. And I'm like, so, my, you being a poor government employee, the first thing that came out of my mind, I was like, look, I don't need to do anything but stay black and die. So, anything, you know? So he's like, no, you'll be good at it. And I'm like, bro, I am poor. I barely got one gun. I got to get two more for guns.
Right.
One more shot. I have a shotgun. So he's like, you'll be okay. He's like, I promise you, you'll be okay. So I hum and hawed for a couple months. And then I was like, yo, this dude barely knows me. Barely knows my last name, that I see something in me, maybe I should kind of venture down that rabbit hole. And I reached out to him after finding a match in New Mexico. Like, it was an all-women's match. It was a girl in the guns, three-gun university. And the way it is, it's a match. It's a full-blown match, but just at a slower pace. Oh, nice. So I called him up. I was like, hey, look, I want to shoot this match in New Mexico. And he's all like, why New Mexico? And I'm like, I don't know anybody in New Mexico. So if I mess up, I'm out. Nobody knows I'm a singer. It is all good, you know?
There's no evidence.
I'm not sure. It's like, I'll do it. So he actually loaned me his Benelli M2.
Cool.
Which is super fancy shotgun. I already tricked out, ready 4.3 gun. I had my AR that I built, which was like an A2 setup. Definitely not the best for competition, but it was all I had. And I had my duty gun at the time, which was a Glock 22. So I'm shooting 40 cal.
Okay.
So drove up to New Mexico, shot this match. I ended up taking second in my division, very first competition. And nice. Like, I was hooked. So then we got range all the way home. That was like a 9-hour drive. Actually, kind of more like 10 because I'm like a touristy. Like, I was stopping a little random spots. Like, oh, let me just see. Maybe I'm gonna buy moccasins, you know, or whatever. So, no, damn well, I'm not going to wear them. But I was on the phone with him the whole time. And I was also on the internet, like just on my phone, just looking up the next competition. Like,
that's where else? Awesome.
Completely hooked, and I still have that trophy. Actually, have all my trophies, but that particular trophy is my favorite because that was I got out my comfort zone. I did something, and this was good. So
that's okay. That's awesome, and like wow. I mean, you covered like several things I was already going to ask you. Like, how'd you get in, dude? That's amazing, and like for me, it's like seriously inspiring. I've always wanted to do some kind of cool competition with it, but I was like, no, that's not really like, black people don't do that, but apparently we do.
We weren't exposed to it. So I grew up in the ghetto of Detroit. So like the only people who had guns while I was growing up were literally gangbangers and cops. That was it. So the culture is off. And then when I moved to Arizona, obviously got friends of all different backgrounds. They're like, oh, I killed my first deer at 6. I'm like, man, holy crap. Like, I had no idea that was even a thing.
Yeah.
You know? So even like a lot of outdoor stuff outside of shooting, like camping, hiking, all this stuff was, you know, I finally got exposed to it because that was just stuff that white people did. So, like, yeah. So, but this is absolutely.
Hey, we're just being honest here.
Like, I was like, hey, it's your first podcast. Like, let me just go ahead with everything
we're
out there.
Air everything out. Yeah. We're nothing, no holds barred.
Here, and I like actually started to like enthrall this whole full blown American idea. Like, I can do all this stuff.
Yes.
Whereas, you know, my culture, you know, growing up, a lot of this stuff, it was so divided. Like, it plus the exposure there. The only time I seen like, you know, snowboarding was like X Games, maybe. Or the Olympics on TV.
Yeah.
You know.
And a very small snippet, too. Just like itty bitty. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A little bit. Yeah. But I can tell you during the Summer Olympics, who all playing basketball, you know, stuff like that. So that's the thing I was like, and now looking back on it, I was like, man, this is pretty the programming. Government's up to no good. But that's a whole nother.
I was going to say, you come back for another episode on that one, let me tell you.
If you seriously want to do like an afterthought government conspiracy tinfoil hat, like let's go episode, I'm totally down for it.
Yep, you're coming. Don't worry, you coming back. I already know. I was like, just this little bit is just that. Okay, so so 3-gun, that's awesome. Yes. I mean, wow. So you shoot pistol, shotgun, and what's the other one? Do you have your AR? Rifle. Okay. Yep. So tell me a little bit about what the differences are there and how you would like maybe train differently for something like that. I'm super curious.
So basically you're learning, most people start off, everybody normally has a pistol. So everybody gets pretty proficient with pistol. Then like the progression happens, then you get an AR. So you start learning AR and stuff like that. So and then shotgun is like, honestly, probably one of the hardest things to learn. Only because of like, it is totally different from the shotgun from if you're doing like trap and skeet, where you can only have 2 rounds. You know, like this is like a full shotgun where depending on your division, you can shoot what we call two magazines, 2 guns. So now I'm looking at how to load fast.
Yeah.
Now I'm starting to play with my chokes and things like that, different patterns, different ammo, different capacities too. So, like, and that's just another modification. So, like, in the 3-gun division that I compete in, my house phone is very weird.
You have a house phone?
Like, I don't know if you can see it right there. Like, my buddy on Instagram, he's like, hey, you got a house phone. Why you got a landline? He's like, are you about to phone into the Matrix? Like, why do you have one?
You never know when you're going to need a landline.
So weird, but. Yeah, you never know. I mean, cell phones may go down. I still got a landline, you know, something.
I'm right there with you.
All right, just happened. But so shotgun is a little bit different to learn because it requires a little different manipulation that a lot of people aren't used to. So that takes some time. However, because of that fact, shotgun makes or break a three gunner. So like you could be strong at pistol, but if you're not strong in the other two, you know, you're not going to be a competitive, more competitive against other competitors. But shotgun, like, I think because of so much work I put behind it, I'm like, I love this thing. Like, no, it's not, you know, a lot of people think, oh, you just point and shoot. No, they're actually aiming to be competitive on shotgun. And so because it was that, like, that challenge behind it, I was like, I absolutely fell in love with shotguns. So
shotgun is probably one of my favorite. I don't do well with the, when I say the higher gauges, the bigger gauges, right? Like a 12 gauge is kind of hard for me, but I can, you know, kick it with my 410 like it's nothing. Obviously, you know, a little bit less kick there. But yeah, I can only imagine. And then I find them a little bit heavy for me too, which is weird because I'm kind of a big girl, but it takes some arm strength, which, you know, training was another thing that I was going to ask you about is how did you keep up with that?
A lot of people overthink shotgun. So they think, oh, it's just arm strength. I'm like, no, it's actually more core, booty, legs. So like, and everyone's like, oh no, you hold it. I'm like, yeah, but guess what else your arms are attached to? Your
torso. The rest of your body.
The rest of your body. So let's work more with your body instead of against it. So like, if I know I'm going like what we call hard and fast on shotgun, I actually widen my stance and I actually like sink down a little bit. So lower my center of gravity, and I get behind the gun. Like, it is actually shoulder properly, my face is on it. When I say face on that, cheek it properly, and then just go. And you're holding on to it. So it's, and I run a 12 gauge that is the caliber of three gun, and it's fine. And also the shotgun that I run, so my buddy who loaned me his M2, so since I'd learned on that gun, not gonna lie, I was working at a, basically I have more jobs in Jamaica. So I had a little side job at a gun store, and we got Benelli's 40% off. I was like, oh my God, I have to do this. So I need to do this. So his shotgun, he had a Woodland Camel one, like straight from the factory. And so I was like, I want this exact same shotgun. So I called up Benelli, you know, once I submitted my order. And I was like, hey, how much is it for Woodland Camel? They're like, oh, that's $100 extra. I'm like, I don't need Woodland.
I don't need that.
I'm still poor. I'll take black. It's okay.
So, oh my God.
I ran that shotgun. I one of few people to actually like shot out the receiver of a Benelli M2. So I actually had to replace my receiver.
Wow.
2 years ago? Yeah, 2 years ago. Replace it with a Roth Performance. That particular company, they specialize in shotguns. Like, that is all they do. Cool. And they came out with receivers, so it was a one-for-one match. So they basically had to take my barrel, my tube, my internals, my stock, and put it on that receiver, and it's awesome.
Nice.
And the blue tubes, they're actually one of the lightest tube shotguns on the market. So
That's
definitely one to run. And you actually, a lot of people have seen, like, John Wick. So John Wick was actually running the M4. You know, and then like
we all love John Wick. Come on,
everybody loved John Wick. Yeah, and I started a little John Wick gun collection because I was like, well, I want to have all the guns that John Wick had. So, but he was actually running an M4, which is a tactical version of the M2. So it's inertia driven, it's a lot lighter, it recoils very nice. Like, that is a really good gun to run. And when a lot of people come off like, hey, you know, I really like 12 gauge, I'm like, let me guess, your very first 12 gauge shotgun was like probably an over-under, something that's, you know, 26-inch barrel, something that's just unholy freaking heavy.
I was just going to say, ungodly crazy heavy, like, what in the world? You can barely pick it up. Yeah.
From, you know, 1820. So, like, a lot of people's first shotgun experience was not the greatest. And then on top of that, the education behind it, because they got told something dumb, like, oh, you just point and shoot it. Yeah, now you're going to not have a good time with it. So a lot of women get kind of turned off on guns.
Exactly.
Because of that. It's usually, I call it the drunk uncle syndrome, where, you know, they're out camping one day, drunk uncle's like, hey, I got this 44 Magnum revolver, let's shoot it at this tree. Yeah. And next thing you know, it goes crazy, and now they're afraid of guns. So it's a struggle whenever I have new students that I have to break that mental obstacle. But shotgun is actually super easy to shoot once you get down to fundamentals of it.
I love it. Yeah, definitely. I feel like that is almost like a stigma around that. Excuse me. How would you break someone of that? Like, I started out with, I believe, a 45, and I was like, that might be a little too much for me in the beginning. I went down to a 9, I went down to a 22, and I was like, well, before I went to the 22, I would flinch whenever my AR would go off. That is, what, it's a 223. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm getting a good shot off. I was like, but I still have this little flinch every time. And so my husband was actually like, why don't you try a 22 real quick and just feel it? And it was like, mm-hmm. plink, I was like shooting a BB gun. I was like, oh, that's great. And that kind of made the switch for me to where it doesn't bother me anymore. I don't know why that is, but what's your experience?
Well, I think that girls overthink everything, every single thing.
And well, yeah, we're girls. Like, that's why we're so smart.
I'm not gonna lie. If girls designed guns, they would be some of the worst guns on the market with way too much extra stuff on it. I'm just throwing it out there. So I'm gonna use this with you because I do this with my students. Like, how simple is your husband?
This is being recorded.
I'm pretty sure he's pretty simple.
Pretty easy, same stuff, same pair of shoes in 17 million different colors. Like,
you know why? Because it works.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's what he says. He's like, because it works. I was like, well, I have that too, but I had to go through 17 million other things to find the one thing that works. And now that I got it, we're good. But it took me.
And this is why if women had, oh my God, if when we had like the first war, if women designed guns, we would have lost. Like, because it would take so long to get a gun into production. So like, dudes are simple. So pretty much like, if you look at a pistol, you know why the slide is called a slide?
Because it slides.
Exactly.
We don't need any fancy word for that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Why the grip's called a grip.
Yep.
Yeah. Why is the trigger guard called the trigger guard? Because it guards the trigger. So front
sight,
rear sight,
simplicity,
right?
Yes.
So men design guns, which are simple. So when I get some girl that's like, I keep flinching. I'm like, you know, this gun is supposed to go off every time you press the trigger, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because it's simple. Because
if it didn't, that would be a problem.
When it doesn't go off, when it's supposed to go off, now I got to troubleshoot this thing. And now I actually use a little bit more brain power here. So this super simple machine just need to be ran simply. Like, you don't have to overthink the basic things. I was like, how many arguments you started with your dude when you overthought something? Exactly. So stop. And they're like, oh, that actually makes sense. And I was like, and check this out, though. This is how simple it gets. You see that front sight. Now, if you keep that front sight in the middle of that rear sight and you press that trigger without that sight moving, that shot is going to go where you want it to go. And they're like, light bulbs going off. It's like, it's just the most simplest of things. Why are people overthinking this? So, like, I'm like, why are you flinching? You know it's supposed to go off. How about this? So we'll dry fire. And I'm like, okay, on this next round, we're actually going to load one round. So people get actually accustomed to loading magazines. Mm-hmm. We're going to load one round. And we already know subconsciously it's going to go off because it's supposed to. All right. Now we're making a conscious decision. So we're going to kind of sort of treat it like dry fire. We're going to keep the safety rules intact. Or we're just going to point at the middle of this piece of paper. And I want you to press that trigger without that front sight moving. And guess what it hit? Middle of the damn paper. I'm like,
nice.
Holy crap. Again. But like, and let's do this again. And like, this is how we get that repetitive practice in. And then like, when the light bulbs go off, that's actually my favorite moment. Cause they're just like, yeah, I was being a girl. Yeah. Yeah. Let's not do that. And then it's literally just breaking down, you know, the concept and also breaking down the fundamentals of the concept and just like not overthinking. Like I even tell them, I'm like, you can be a girl about certain things, just do not be a girl about this.
Right?
You're burning way too many more calories on something that doesn't require it at all. So don't make it hard on yourself.
Like, I love it. And so this is why you always have, you should be dry firing in your stories.
Yes. Just a constant reminder. And and I know a lot of followers love that. And it started because of like, we already, this is going to be for the conspiracy theorist side episode later.
Yes.
Because we live in a two-tier justice system. And I just want to let y'all know, we may have to basically turn into the new forefather, you know, founding father. So we need to, you know, basically just dry fire.
Stay prepared. That's all. Yeah, that's all I'm saying. Stay prepared.
And I love when people are like, you know, they respond. They're like, damn, you bust me. Okay, I'm going to go drive park. Cool. Thank you, man. Like, I appreciate it.
I love it. Crack me up. And just a little side note. Every time I see one that's like over a certain area, I'm like, how'd you know we were going to look there? You knew we were going to look there. So I'm just reminding you, you should be dry firing. And it cracks me up every time.
My entire adult life, I've literally been studying the behavior of people, mainly criminals, but people, right? Yeah. I already know like what everybody's going to immediately look at. So that's why I was like, let me just put that there.
We're just going to, yeah. You know you're looking. That's great.
Oh my God.
Well, I want to like kind of switch gears just a little bit because I know you went to Thailand recently.
Yes.
Tell me about that. I've never been to Thailand. How awesome. And you went with the USA team. Woo!
Yes. Thailand was wild. So this would have been my second time overseas. First time was France in 2018. There's so many different teams on the USA team. So we have Team USA and then we have our division teams. So my division,
the ladies modified, if I remember correctly.
Nice. We need to change that name. It make
I
it
was like, real. What does that even mean? I was like, does that mean we're old? Because I'm only 42. You can't be that much older than me. What is that?
So overseas, they have names for different divisions. And the divisions are based off of the equipment of the gun that you're shooting. So ladies modified, or just modified period, pretty much meant that we can run optics, compensators, but it had to be a tube magazine on our guns, and it had to be no longer than 51 and a half inches overall. Okay. And it had to fit in a box. So that was what modified is. And I'm not a fan of the name because it makes it sound like a whole bunch of trannies, but I'm just like,
I didn't go that far. I just thought maybe they were
participating. I'm like, oh, great. That game started overseas, started in like Europe, Thailand. So that's what IPSC, that was the name they came up with. And I'm just like, okay. All right, I'll play y'all game. So, but the Thailand trip was, same thing was for the Shotgun World shoot. And I was actually super happy to be, you know, selected to represent the United States again.
Yeah.
And my division team, we fell a little bit short. We finished fourth. We missed third by like 3.9%.
Oh, man.
It was a slaughter. I think I could mentally handle it a little bit better, but I was just like, bro, like, what could we done differently? Like, hold up, timeout. We need to figure this out. So, but the trip itself, I work graveyards. So like acclimating to the other side of the world, which is 14 hours ahead, like my sleep schedule was great. Like I didn't have any issues. My teammates are up at like, oh, dark 30 every day because day people hours. I'm like, fine. So we decided to go out a whole week early before the competition. And so they can get acclimated. So we're like, hey, let's do all the touristy stuff now. Mm-hmm. And then for competition, and then we had a couple of days afterwards to do more touristy stuff. So the competition aspect of it was really good. And a lot of people think, you know, Americans are kind of bullies. We kind of are. Like, real talk, we kind of are. Rightfully so. Like, they can only own certain guns. And that's why there's all the different divisions. Is to actually try to get, you know, more and more countries to participate in the world shoot, which is still the Olympics of practical shooting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's like countries where they got to sell their firstborn just to get a gun type of thing. And it's like that old, I don't know if it was Bruce Lee or I'm trying to think whoever made this quote, that was like, do not fear the man that knows 10,000 kicks. Fear the man that has done one kick 10,000 times.
Yeah.
So like the competition over there was actually pretty damn good. Really good. But there are some perks. I mean, we had our strengths and weaknesses. One of our strengths of the shotgun team is that since we're mostly comprised of three gunners, I would say we're like 95% three gunners out of the 40 of us that went over there. We excelled on any stages that was super tight maneuvering because we have to do that with all long guns, both shotgun and rifle here in the States. Mm-hmm. Anything where we have to go prone with a long gun or with shotgun, we did great because we always got to go prone with rifle, you know, sometimes, or, you know, shotgun here and there. And we excel at those, but some of the spots that we didn't excel at were like a lot of different props, a lot of high round stages with slugs. Like a lot of the matches here in the United States, you know, we'll have a match where there's probably going to be about maybe 3 to 4 slug targets. there was one stage we had like 16, actually more than that. I would say about 16 to 24 slugs. And that's a lot. Mm-hmm. So that is a lot. Like, we've learned a lot about our barrels, different mechanics and things like that that happen to our guns when they start to heat up. Mm-hmm. But all in all, we definitely, as a team, as a whole United States team, definitely held our own. Awesome. So, but other Thailand stuff, all the tourism stuff, super fun, super cheap. Like, so I was posting all those pictures and video, like my best friend, who's also on the team, Cindy Coker, we're on the beach. She got an hour long back massage. I got a pedicure. We both had two beers and it cost us like $21.
Whoa. Okay.
Like, okay, cool. You know, like fresh coconuts were like,
We do this every day.
We were on that beach like almost every day. We were like drink. We had fresh coconuts almost every day. Like a fresh coconut over there was like 25 baht, which is like 30 cents, almost about 50 cents, because they're like coconut trees everywhere. So it's not like here. Yeah, everything is imported. Mm-hmm. Or like grocery store coconut is like $4, and it's like nowhere near as fresh as, you know, straight off the beach, and you had some dude with a machete hack it open. Or, you know, like
there you go.
But definitely, it was definitely pretty cool. Would love to do that again. I want to do it again without guns because that was a whole house one itself. But
I bet.
Other than that, it was good.
Going through security and stuff at the airport or like.
No, just all the permits because. So we had to get permits. We had to pay a retarded amount of shipping and taxes on our ammo.
Oh, wow.
Like over there. And also, if you declared ammo coming back. I'm just saying. I'm just saying, but yep. You know, just the whole heavily regulated stuff. Mm. But other than that, everything else was actually pretty cool. I'm actually wearing, it's funny you brought that up. I'm actually wearing these pants that I picked up for they were like 100 baht. So they were like $3 and they were like some of the best, like little.
Give us a model session. There you go. Oh yeah. There you go.
Cotton pants. I was like, yeah, put these on.
There you go.
Yeah. I gave them gifts. I was like, this is cool. So.
I mean, that sounds like absolutely amazing experience. I really love it. I remember you saying something about humidity and how it was acting, but you had a bag that was hooking you up.
Yes. So Bone Dry, this company, they're like, hey, you know, a lot of people deal with moisture on their guns. There has to be a way for us to actually take moisture away from your guns. Mm-hmm. So they created a rifle bag. They also have some pistol bags, electronic bags. Yeah. They even got a tool bag that they made. And it all has built-in desiccant. So, like, sweet. I was super freaking excited to partner with them on that. Because I was just
very
like,
cool.
I am not trying to deal with rust on my gun, especially overseas. Like, and I don't even know what resources are going to be available to me to, like, possibly get off my gun. Mm-hmm. So, the best way to deal with rust is prevention. So, that's why I called them out. I was like, yo, check us out. Me and the state need a bag. We need bags.
We need bags. Hook us up.
The humidity over there is equivalent to like Texas in August.
Oh gosh.
Like,
yeah.
Most, like it's pretty bad. So
I have experienced this. Horrible.
Yeah. Horrible.
You need a shower as soon as you walk outside, you're like, ah.
Yeah, you never drive. Yeah. But the cool thing about shooting in Texas is that like there was the Italian team. They're on the Italian women's team. They're like, I don't know. It's hot. Like in their broken English. And I'm just like, yeah. I kind of live there just a little bit.
It'll be fine. Wear a tank top. Drink water. It'll be okay.
Drink water. I got some liquid night eating. You know, you want to try that? You know,
right?
You just dehydrated because other than that, you're going to suck. And like, and I've always wanted to like, if we're competing against each other, I want you to be at your best. So I'm at my best. So if you know, win or lose, it actually feels good. You mm-hmm. know, it's not like I won because somebody passed out due to dehydration. I'm like, no, here, drink this. Because I want a real freaking fight. Like,
come back to life. Let's do this. Yeah.
Stay hydrated. Like, come on, ladies. Like,
crack me up.
But it was Bone Dry. I was definitely pretty solid on that. I actually do have one of their tool bags, too, that I'll be doing a little bit more Bronco and Overland, you know, content soon. So right now, my Bronco's in the shop getting my engine kind of rebuilt a little bit. So.
All right. Bronco, huh? Yeah. Very cool. Okay. Do you have like a classic one or is it one of these newfangled ones with the powder paint?
No, the new ones are way too soft. So I have a 95 OJ Simpson white Bronco. My license plate on it says maybe OJ. So everybody
knows. Oh my God. So when I come to Phoenix, I'll be able to find you. by your license plate.
I will say a good dozen, that body style, which is what we call fifth gen Broncos, but it's mainly between 1980 to 96, that style. There's about a dozen of them that are white, and they all have OJ themed license plates, which I think is pretty cool. So, I was like, we need to have a club. We need to be a gang or something.
I'm saying, we practically are already. Y'all just need to get together, just line up. We'll take a photo, and it's done. Done deal.
Any of your classic Bronco owners, right. White Bronco, let me know. Let's link up. Let's do this. So.
Crack me up. All right. I got a couple of rapid fire questions for you if you're ready, my dear. All right. So how do you stay balanced training and competing and working a graveyard shift with police?
Caffeine.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
If it wasn't for coffee, pre-workout, and Uncrustables, like, I don't even think.
She said Uncrustables? Like, I'm going to have a whole episode on nutrition now. I feel it. It's coming. She said Uncrustables. Oh my goodness. All right. It's okay. We'll work on that. We'll work on that.
I literally posted a picture over here while we were over in Thailand because I was so impressed. Actually, they're quite unhealthy, but they didn't have anything in Thailand. So we were over there with old school peanut butter jelly sandwiches. Like, but all right, it'll do.
It'll work.
No, y'all need to sell these in freaking Thailand. I'm just throwing it out there. So.
Crack me up. All right. So have you had any setbacks or disappointments in competition, and how do you handle those?
Oh, I had a couple. I mean, they're inevitable. They're going to happen. So one thing that I actually tell newer shooters, newer competitors too, especially at a lot of the women's matches that, you know, I teach at, is that it's really easy for us to get hung up on the bad stuff. So everybody gets like a match booklet. I don't even have one on my table here. A match booklet would have like all the stages in it, sponsors, which if it was for sponsors, we wouldn't have this great of a sport anyways. Yeah. But I'm like, hey, write down three things that you did great and three things you need to work on. So I'll fall back to that. Like, okay, my shotgun loads are great. My rifle shots are on point. Pistol is good. All right, I need to work more on movement. Actually, like a lot of footwork, stuff like that. You know, I may need to work on, it could have been an equipment failure. Okay, I need to address that as soon as I get home. You know, like, so I write all that stuff down and just know that, like, okay, the next one is not going to happen. Yeah. Or the next one I'll be improved. So being honest with yourself is going to allow you to have that growth. And that's one thing that I've seen some shooters get, like, super racked up in their heads about. I'm like, bro, it's okay. It is all right.
There's always next time.
It's okay. What's going to happen tomorrow? Another day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Another opportunity to prove. So.
All good. All right. What is your ultimate goal in competitive shooting? Is there like a top of the top?
Like, it's totally different. Like with me, you know, like I like the sport and I like growing the sport too. I like teaching and getting more and more people in. And I actually had a couple of ladies. This was at Fall Fest. Actually ran by her own gun. They're like, Ursula, why you do this? I'm like, real talk, I am selfish. I am super selfish. And they're like, well, why? I'm like, I want more girls to compete against. So therefore, why not teach more girls to be competitive so we can compete against each other? I'm like, I'm completely selfish. Like,
I feel like that's totally not selfish at all. I just think that's awesome.
Like a lot of three-gun matches I shot, there would be like a women's division. There would be like eight of us.
Oh, wow.
Now, 8 years later, good Lord, it's been that long. 8 years later, now we have like full woman matches with like 100, 120, you know, competitors.
That's awesome.
So I'm like, dude, this is great. This is so awesome. We need more. Like, yes. We definitely need more. Definitely so that's more. Why I, you know, teach as much as I do, because like I want more females to compete on the actual, you know, range side of things. My goal has been the Olympics. So one thing that happened with Thailand, which is pretty cool, IPSC announced that they're going to have the Shotgun World Shoot as like kind of like an expedition type sport for the 2028 Olympics in LA. Ooh. So, my gosh. So the next Shotgun World Shoot is going to be in Greece. And I don't know why. I got this gut feeling.
You're going to Greece, baby. Yes.
So what? I got this gut feeling that whoever wins Greece are going to be automatically slotted for the shotgun match at the Olympics. So I'm like, dude, it's very Olympics versus like trap and skeet, which I kind of find boring. It's actually very competitive. It just mentally, I need to run around with a gun. I can't just stand still in a vest. I've never owned a vest in my life, but I got to sit there and shoot clays. I'm like, or I want to shoot all the things. That'd be really awesome if I could pull that up.
Never wanted to go to the Olympics, but I might have to, if that happens, girl, I might have to come and kick it and be like, that's my girl over there.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But I know that I actually started looking at timelines because, like, of course, first everything starts as a thought, then it turns into a plan, and then it's execution. So
yes.
I know that I retired from law enforcement at the end of next year. So I got like a full like year to train for Greece. Ooh. And also, you know, if I win Greece, that'd be great. And then, you know, basically the Olympics after that. So
you're going full time. Yes, that's awesome. I'm so excited for you.
like it's so that.
Oh my gosh, that's going to be amazing. Well, I mean, you kind of answered a couple of my other ones here already. So I was going to say, how do you manage nerves before a big competition? That's another one.
Man, you know, it's funny. I've been competing for like 8 years and I still have like what we call first stage jitters.
Yeah.
So we have this thing called Send It With Jesus. And it's just like, yo, whatever happens, happens. You know,
yes.
I can prepare so much. But if there's something that's not there, I'm going to figure it out and move on. Mm-hmm. So like, then it's more so like, not letting what happened on one stage affect the next stage and the next stage and the next stage. So once I'm done with a stage, let's just say I have a bad stage, I literally give myself 5 minutes. And nice. It's something I actually started on the law enforcement side. If something stupid happens, you know, everybody has a work husband, work wife, whatever. Mm-hmm. I'll be like, hey, look, I need you to time me. They're like, well, I'm 5 minutes. They're like, oh, Ben, all right, cool. So for 5 minutes. And like, and then, you know, it's not going to matter in 5 years. So that's why we have the 5 minute rule. And we will go. And like, it's so funny. Like, so you see, like, the faster we're going, we're trying to take that whole 5 minutes so it does not bother us later. And I do the same thing because I'm in matches. So
that's I'm just awesome. Like,
oh, got my 5 minutes out. We'll walk it off. All right, I need to prepare for the next stage.
Yes. I love that. So my next one is, what's your message to young girls who are either dreaming of becoming competitive shooters or going into law enforcement, which I don't know if you are familiar with this idea, but I was told, you know, that's not really it's not a job for girls, not a job for women, blah, blah, blah. Like, but maybe people are dreaming about that. So what would you say?
My, because it's rapid fire, first thing that comes to mind is literally don't be a bitch. So you might as well do it. You're never going to be ready.
That's life.
And as for the law enforcement aspect, like, my entire life has been about doing things that other people can't do or won't do. So why am I going to start now to be like, oh, somebody, you know, said I can't do something. I'm like, first of all, I'm American. I can do whatever I want.
Thank you.
So pretty much, I'm pretty sure I can go into law enforcement. Law enforcement is tricky because you do have to find an agency that matches your personality, you know, your values, things like that. So I'm happy to be with an agency that is, you know, pro 2A, mm-hmm. not doing, they didn't do anything stupid during COVID, you know,
thank you.
Which is a hot mess. And they are super supportive of their people, you know, so like, and that was actually, you know, my second agency, which I will be retiring from, like, they've been treating me really well since I've been there. So I'm like, all right, cool. But like, yeah, literally find that agency and just do it. Because like law enforcement, it's going to be one of those careers. It's always going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So they always
going to be needed. Always necessary.
Always going to be there. Like, especially right now where there's not a lot of jobs that actually have pensions
mm-hmm.
or they have like a 401k or A and it's kind of sketch. I'm mm-hmm. just saying there's someone out there on if you can find an agency with a pension, definitely do it. That's just more of a financial thing. Yeah. But there's been times where like, you know, a situation happened. It was much better that a female was there. You know, like, hey, look, I know you're overthinking this, but check this out.
Yeah,
you do that. So we're just going to have a conversation. We're just going to move this party somewhere else, you know? But this is one of those things where it's like, yes, you are valued. You are needed. If you want to get in law enforcement, do it.
Yes.
Just find the right agency. Do ride-alongs. And ride-alongs are free. And I tell people, ride-alongs is the best way to speed data agency. Mm-hmm. So I've been on multiple ride-alongs with different agencies, whereas like I'm like you, you're cool, but I've started seeing some questionable stuff. So y'all not getting my application, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if I can vibe with that. I don't know. That doesn't represent me. So let me look elsewhere, because there are tens of thousands of agencies nationwide. You can find one that fits you. Mm-hmm. So
awesome. Well, that's pretty amazing. I think you're swell, Miss Ursula.
In the guns. I was like, dude, God, this is
meant to be.
Like, this is so cool. Oh my God.
Can I ask you what your middle name is? I'm curious. Just out of
Marissa?
Okay, we aren't matched completely, but my dad's name is William. So I mean I was like, we were meant to meet each other. This is a whole thing. I was like, oh man, she's cool too. No, seriously, it's really a pleasure actually meeting you. We are going to meet in person someday, very soon. I don't know when exactly. Definitely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So last bit here. I'm really big on bringing younger women, like my daughter's 13, into the sport and just, how do you say, introducing them and having them experience and get exposed to. What advice would you have for a younger human?
I'm trying to find other word than, or other term than.
You can't just say don't be a bitch to a 13-year-old, Ursula.
If you don't like it, that's okay. Like, I don't like kale. I've been plant-based for years. I hate kale, and I still try it from time to time. It tastes like vegan salad.
Oh.
I'm like the guy that discovered kale. I'm like, why were you out there eating weird leaves?
It used to be the stuff on the buffet. It wasn't always some cool thing. They just shoved it around stuff.
Kale sucks. Kale is gross. I'm just putting it out there. I know some of my vegan buddies are going to be like, what? I love kale. You like kale. I don't like kale. And I still try it from time to time just to make sure I don't like it.
I'd rather drink asparagus raw. I'm sorry. No. Right? I won't be doing that.
Well, gross. But one of the things that I like doing with kids to actually get them in competition is that 22s are perfect.
Yes.
And then there's a competition called Steel Challenge. And what Steel Challenge is, you literally stand still in a box and you shoot the same five targets five times. And you do it with 22s. It was literally designed for kids. We have a running joke. We also designed for old people with blown out knees. But it's fun. I'm like, no, I'm just saying. But Steel Challenge was literally designed for kids, where you stand in a box and you shoot five targets. And you can do it with 22s. It's super cheap, super fun. The whole family can compete. The whole family can sign up together. Mm-hmm. And there's actually awards for entire families that are shooting. So like if you have, two parents and a kid, you're all up. Y'all are literally competing against other families. So I'm like, that is actually pretty freaking cool.
Sounds very fun.
For other competitive shooters, like myself, we'll dabble in different disciplines, because that's what Steel Challenge is, discipline. Three guns discipline, USPSA, which is pistol for the most part, that's a discipline. Sporting clays, discipline. So we'll dabble in different disciplines to get better at our main one. So the cool thing with Steel Challenge, it teaches you transitions, as in like target transitions. Okay. Because there is a way that you have to shoot these targets, and then you have your red stop plate or whatever the last plate that you have to engage. But it gives you opportunity to kind of think like, okay, what's going to be the more efficient way for me to do this? Mm-hmm. So we'll play around the Steel Challenge. Like, it's fun. We'll do, IDPA because it's fun. And we talk a lot of smack about IDPA, but it's got to that point where it's like, if we're going to be talking smack, we need to actually do it.
And then you can talk more.
Let's do it. Like, I'm not a huge fan of USPSA, but it's the way that I get the most amount of pistol practice in. Nice. So, like, I don't really care about my classification USPSA. I just like the fact that it allows me to get so much pistol practice for three gun. Here in Arizona, like I said, we have matches literally every day except for Mondays. And I can go do an all-rifle match. I can do, sporting clays, trappist heat, stuff like that. There's also, tactical shotgun matches that I can do. Anything for me to get better at three gun, I'm down for it. And I'm willing to try it. But for kids, get them in, start them with Steel Challenge. That is going to be the easiest, the cheapest, and the most fun. And it's something that you can actually, they can practice.
Awesome. Well, Ursula, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it, sharing your journey. And I know we're going to have to chat again because are on the same page on so many different topics. Is there any last words you would like to leave us with?
No, just get out there. Literally getting out there is half the battle.
Get out there, so, and don't be a bitch.
Absolutely. And
what if I'm about to bleep words out?
I'm like, everybody sucks when they first get there because you don't know.
Exactly.
So how else are you going to figure it out unless you get there?
That fear of failure is a killer, man. I'm telling you.
Fail forward. Yeah. So that fear kills so many dreams and so many possibilities because everybody's afraid to fail. I'm like, you're going to fail. You're going to suck. Once you know you're going to suck, then it's going to make everything else easier. Because you can go out there and be like, hey, I suck. Okay, cool. And now I can do something about it.
I love it.
So, I'm just saying. Just get out there. Yep.
Is it weird if we both say bye, Ursula, at the same time?
I can write what I'm doing just because, right?
All right. Bye, Ursula.
Bye, Ursula.